Hey gang, I'm here to tell you about Jumperfest, a benefit festival in memory of Adam Jumper. Jumperfest takes place in Austin this Sunday, November 1st from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Hotel Vegas and the Volstead Lounge, with all proceeds benefiting the National Motorcycle Safety Fund. Artists include Exit, The Nimbus, Davis Jumper, The Chump Change Variety Show, and me, Johnny Gowdy, and a whole lot more, okay? They'll have food. They will have a silent auction. That's this Sunday, November 1st at Hotel Vegas and the Volstead Lounge. Jumperfest, do it. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic, fantastic show for you guys today. I am joined by singer Malford Milligan and guitar player Dave Seabury from Austin's newest supergroup, Big Cat. Yeah, they have a self-titled debut album coming out this week. Big Cat also features drummer Les Fisher, keyboard player Stefano Intellisano, and legendary bass player Ross Gobeck. Yeah, they're putting out their debut self-titled album this week and doing a very special record release show Thursday night here in Austin, October 29th, 9 p.m. at the Continental Club. And then Friday, they're doing an in-store at Waterloo Records, Friday, October 30th at 4 p.m. Get out there and check it out. Get out there and see this band. If you want to check it out and see what they're like, their music is on SoundCloud. They have a couple of songs on there, Thief of Hearts and Any Day Like Yesterday. Get up there, Big Cat. On SoundCloud, also on Facebook, okay? Great band. They're doing the release show. I have a great conversation with these two dudes. I've known them. I've known Dave and Malford for a few decades. I've known Malford since, like, 1989 or 1990. And Dave Seabury, shortly after that, when I moved to Austin in 91 or in 1992, I met him. Great guys. We have a fantastic conversation. Mark Prock, their manager, joined us a little bit. He makes a little special guest star appearance. Great guy. You might have heard him. He wrote the book Home Today, Gone Tomorrow. I had him on the show a couple of months ago. Fantastic conversation. Photographic history of Austin music and bands that he worked with, from Stevie Ray Vaughan, Fabulous Thunderbirds, Vallejo, Storyville, which included Malford Milligan. Anyway, these guys are together, and they have this new album coming out this week. That's exciting. Get out to the Continental Club Thursday night, October 29th, 9 p.m., or Waterloo Records for their in-store, October 30th at 4 p.m. For those of you that don't like to go out at night, okay? I imagine some of you don't. We can't all go out at night every night. I'm going out tonight. I'm going to go see some pals play. Might go see a little Money Chicha. See a little music. Yeah. I played a little music this weekend. Oh, check it out. I went to an art opening on Thursday. I want to thank my friend Heather Wagner-Reed from Juice Consulting for inviting me and Zuri out. Great time, star-studded event. Guys like Joe Ely, Terry Allen, Wandering the Halls, Tim Palmer, famous record producer. Hey, Tim. Hey, Johnny. What's up? Nothing. Art show. Beautiful installations, a lot of light installations. Speaking of Terry Allen, my good pal Bale Creek Allen had an installation there called Crucifence, which was very intense. You know what? I'll put a photo of it on my Facebook page. Hey, get up, get out there. If you're not on our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Get on the How Did I Get Here Facebook page. Like it. You'll get lots of pictures. I talk about stuff, and then I post photos or links to it so that you can get more involved. All right? So the Pop Austin Art Show on Thursday night was amazing. It was over at Fair Market, which is a beautiful art space. They built it out, and then the music that they had there was a little computery DJ-y, dancey. And so got in there, checked out some of that stuff. I didn't catch who it was, but they were really cool. Anyway, great art show. Friday night, Skyrocket played an F1 party. It was good. It was a little slow, I think, because of the rain thing, because the F1 thing. People were getting a little scared that it's going to get a little too crowded downtown. It was at Brazos Hall, which is a nice event place here. And then Saturday, we took on the torrential rains. I'm sure even if you're not in Austin or in Texas, you heard about it. It was on the national news. I saw it on Sunday morning. We went to Houston, ground zero for flooding for the show on Saturday, and we played an Easter Seals Halloween Bash fundraiser. Great time. It's the sixth time we played that party, and it was great. And listen, we missed all the floods. I know Houston was flooding, but wherever it was where we were, it wasn't dry. It was raining like crazy, and it was like a downed tree and shit by the hotel, but no big whoop. Made it in and out of there like nothing. Gonna get out tonight, see a little money, chicha. Hey, Saturday night is Halloween night. If you're in Austin, Texas, come on out and see us. Skyrocket is making our return to Cedar Street. We haven't played there in a couple of years. Come on out to Cedar Street Courtyard. It's over there on 4th Street here in Austin. Dress up. Do what you gotta do to party down on Halloween. I might continue the working for Satan look that I have. I'm enjoying that. I could post a photo of that on the Facebook page. Don't forget, you can like our Facebook page. You'll get updates on stuff. You'll get a picture of me with Malford and Dave Seabree from the band Big Cat, whose debut self-titled album comes out this week. Get over to SoundCloud. Look up Big Cat on there. You can hear their song Thief of Hearts or Any Day Like Yesterday. And get involved, man. This week, their record comes out Thursday night, October 29th. Record release show at the legendary Continental Club at 9 p.m. Friday, October 30th, 4 p.m., Waterloo Records. Get out there and see their in-store. All right, sit down or jog or whatever the hell you're doing or driving. Do what you gotta do. Sit back and enjoy my conversation with Malford Milligan and Dave Seabree from Big Cat. Let's get down.
I wish I was perfect, but I am not. Just like you, I'm trying to find my way. Wish I had all the answers, but I do not.
How did you two meet? Like, specifically you two?
Actually, they asked me to start fronting or be one of the front people for the Gary Keller Band. And so that's how we really got together. But we'd seen each other off and on for years.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so I first met you around 1989.
I was so skinny and good looking.
You were. You were a specimen.
I was, man.
You were in Stick People at the time.
I was a stick person.
Yeah, you were a stick person. Do you still stay in touch with those guys?
I talked to Craig Ross about 2 months ago.
Okay.
I saw Mike Harris, Thor Harris,
who
actually, it's so funny, women used to come out and see the band, but they were coming to see him.
Uh-huh.
They didn't know who we were. They didn't care. They were just like coming to see the drummer. And so I saw him probably about 2-3 months ago.
Yeah. Well, don't you remember he would do all that weird stuff? Like he would use like an orange cone as like a kick drum and put like a pad in front of it.
He had customized and built his own kit.
Yeah.
And it worked like crazy. It had great tone the whole bit.
That was an amazing band.
Yeah.
It really was.
It allowed me to do.
It was weird.
It was weird, but it allowed me to do stuff that, you know, because I'd never fronted a band before. I didn't know which direction musically I was in, and that band was all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, and I could just, they just kind of let me, we were doing stuff in 7. We were doing stuff, coming down to 11. I'm like,
yeah.
Are you out your mind? I can't count.
Well, it was cool because it was definitely informed by sort of all that late 80s, like world beat stuff.
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The highlight guitar playing, definitely Craig had that going on. And
yeah.
Got just a monster songwriter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. He still is, isn't he?
Yeah. He's still writing. He's been out with Patty Griffin.
Yeah.
And I think he produced her last album.
Yeah. He's a great producer, too.
Yeah.
And I met you at the Congress House, Dave Seabree, when you were in Native Son.
Yeah, right? Late 80s too, right?
Yeah, early 90s.
Something like that.
Here, yeah.
Yeah, you were a young guy living there, taking care of the place.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I was actually taking care of it, but that's what they expected of me.
Yes.
I think I fell short a lot. But and we also I was thinking about this today. We did those local licks things with you.
We did.
And yeah. I was thinking about, God, how many people did you record? Like everyone.
Everyone.
You've recorded everyone.
That started, I think I started producing that show in 1995, maybe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. They still had it at Pearl's Oyster Bar there. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I had a trailer, and we used to call it the Sound Hillbillies. It was like a trailer that we got from somebody's hunting lodge, and we would pull it with a dually pickup truck and put it in the alley, and it stunk. It was terrible. It was embarrassing.
I don't remember the trailer, but I know I did one of those at Pearl's.
Yeah.
And then also,
At the school, probably.
At the school, where you actually had a good setup and like a control room and stuff like that. At the old school, actually.
And we recorded all that stuff on analog tape, and I bet you I still have your reel. I saved all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened to that? The
local leagues?
Yeah, what?
Well,
because that was maybe I was showering, and then I was like, what? Man, it's gone. I mean, now it's just Laura's for an hour on the thing, talking to someone for a couple of minutes and then playing some tunes.
Well, I don't remember when Emmis bought KLBJ, but I'm guessing it was around 2001, mm-hmm. 2000.
Nuts.
And we did one season at the new Austin School of Music on Ben White.
Okay.
Which was nice because our studio was really upgraded since then, or then, from the old place. And that was it. And Laura's just said, well, it's corporate. They don't want to really push local music anymore. And, you know, that to me, that was kind of I actually don't believe the music scene's dead in Austin right now.
No.
But that was the beginning of like, oh, I see what could happen here.
What we knew is dead.
Yes.
You
it's
know
changed.
What I mean? Yeah. What we once cherished and lived off of is dead.
It's dead.
And now there's a new, we got to find a new, way around that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You definitely managed. When did you start the school?
95. So really? This is our 20th year.
For some reason, I thought it was longer than that. What made you start it? Were you teaching before then?
Well, you know, in the 80s and early 90s, I was playing with a whole lot of different people and sometimes go out on the road, but it seemed like very often after a gig or during a break, someone would come up to me and ask me how I played a certain thing or ask if I'd give a lesson. And this started in the 80s, and I would do it to make a little extra money. And then I found that I really enjoyed sharing what I knew about music and about the guitar specifically. So if you remember it, that fateful night at Congress House, we were doing some sessions, and my first wife had left me like the week before, and I was a wreck and like questioning everything I'd done in life to that point, like, why did she leave, you know, and that.
Yeah.
And I met Katie, who's now my wife, and we've been together for 22 years. So we started hanging in 2003, and I thought, you know, I'm going to try and at least have a semblance of a normal life. So the opportunity to start the school started.
Yeah, I hear you.
And it was a combination of, well, I saw a way where I could stay involved in music and maybe start helping younger people, which is really what we've done in these 20 years.
And, I've noticed that some, but what I've noticed is you've employed half of the town's musicians, which is great, man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Half of Skyrocket is
teaches at the school.
Teaches at school, yeah.
Yeah.
And I got to sit down and talk to a guy who's a great product of the school, I think, Max Frost.
Max?
Yeah. He's really proud of getting to be a part of that. In fact, we talked about him. He was saying how surreal it was that he was at that All ATX thing with you and just like, you know, wow, like, I'm here with my guy that, you know.
That brought him up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I got to tell you, at rehearsal, he and Jane Bryant, who was one of the background vocalists, came through the school too. Jane's got her own thing going on, and they were rehearsing with Ian. They did Helplessly Hoping.
Uh-huh.
And I was standing out there watching it, and I'd kind of teared up just thinking, wow. I tend to be, I'm hard on myself as a person, you know, instead of thinking, hey, I'm great or I've done these things.
Yeah,
I'm just always, oh, you could be better. I'm one of those guys. Not a negative guy, but just better. But I had to pat myself on the back, you know, looking at Max and Jane.
Hell that's great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because you're not a pat on the back. You're definitely not a pat on the back guy. I've never seen you pat yourself on the back.
No, man.
I've never heard you say anything nice about yourself.
Yeah, because I'm like, I'm listening to some of the recordings I've done, and like, boy, that was flat. Well, that was it. Hey, man, that sounded pretty good, man. I like it. You know, that's about as close as I get.
To me, that seems that the sort of the impetus behind Big Cat, like getting, like you're not. It's not like you're done.
You know what? That's what's so cool about it. It's not like I'm done. You know, I you know, for a little bit, I did feel like I was done. I felt like, I've been in all these great bands, and I made all this great music.
Yeah.
That people have not heard.
Yeah. But,
you know, I had a recent management mishap in my band, and that just kind of honed the point. You know, I really wanted to be in something that was, you know, that not only worked musically, but professionally too, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, we always talk about the Austin music scene and the lack of infrastructure. And boy, you ain't joking. It's definitely a lack of infrastructure when it comes to music in Austin. And you're right, the scene is changing.
Yeah.
I mean, but it ain't going away.
No.
It ain't going away. And rents like Mark Proctor did, they always been up. Club owners have always been scuffling for money.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But you know, I think that's kind of, it's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean,
in the whole country.
Yeah. Try and live in downtown San Francisco.
Not going to happen.
That would be crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way. Yeah. So, okay. So the band is you, did you two, was it your, both of your idea?
Well, what happened?
Yeah. What happened? What happened here?
What the?
Gary Keller and Randy Miller, who produced the All ATX, record and concert, asked Malford and I to contribute a song to the 2014 disc, and the song ended up being I'm a Man by Spencer Davis Group.
Uh-huh.
And we just, Malford and I were like, well, who do you want on the session? I said, well, let's call Roscoe Beck. And we asked Tommy Taylor to play drums and Stefano and Telesano to come play B3 and keys on it. So we set up live and recorded the old way.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even think we used a click track. Who knows? But like by the second take, we were all laughing and having fun, and that was it. That's all it took. And a friend of ours named Rick Fine goes, wow, man, you guys ought to start a band.
Another one?
Yeah. And everybody was like, uh-uh, you know, forget that. But a couple weeks went on, and Malford and I had been getting together hanging, and he goes, you know, what do you think about this? And I said, well, you're really busy. And long and short is we started writing together, and it clicked with us. We, as Natalie Zoe says, we had a bromance going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And really what happened, we ended up asking Les Fisher to play drums because Tommy's just real busy playing, and he's got his deal now is he repairs Rolex watches, you know.
Yeah.
Which is great. I'm glad he's doing that. And it ended up being even better. Not that one of them's a better drummer or whatever, but Les just seemed to fit in with where our heads are at right now better, you know.
It's hard to, like, start a new thing once you're past 26, I think. You know what I mean? Like, it's just tough. It's tough for people to find the time. You know, you're playing with people your own age and everyone your own age. Has other stuff going on too, and it's like, you know what I mean?
Well,
it gets difficult, so it's hard. I commend you guys because it's hard to get that.
It is, and especially as you grow, you're used to being more and more in control as an individual artist, and all of a sudden you're in a band and you have to forfeit that control to some extent. And that's the thing about us, that first day we recorded, it was all sort of like the Five Musketeers, where it was all for the greater good.
That's, you know? Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it's got to be.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Is Mofford hard to deal with?
Not at all.
No, I'm reasonably easy. I mean, you know, I've been told, if you had talked to me last night, you would have saw I was hard to deal with. Yeah.
So you played at the All ATX thing. Did you just do I'm a Man, or did you also do an original tune?
Well, it ended up being that Big Cat has become the house band for that show.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty cool. And I'm the music director. So that first year with Big Cat, other than Malford, we got to play with Ruthie Foster and Guy Forsythe, mm-hmm. and Christopher Cross did a cool arrangement with Aaron Ivey, some other artists.
Wow.
So, but for us as a band, that was it. But we knew right away, we came out and did that song. We had a full horn section too.
Yeah.
John Mills did an arrangement of that. And the crowd, the response solidified, yeah, that we probably ought to see this through.
There's some horns on your song and on the Reverb Nation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's that? Is that John Mills too?
Yeah, John did. There are three songs with horns on the record, and okay. he did all the arrangements.
Where'd you do the record? At the school? Or
yeah.
Okay.
We call that Antimatter Studios now.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
You didn't know it.
No, I didn't. Well, you know, I don't know much.
Because of the deconstruction?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I figured. So how did it, I mean, there's how many tunes on the record?
Ten.
And did you write more than that, or did you write 10 songs and they ended up on the record?
Well, I think we have like 14 that we've written.
Okay.
But it wasn't like we chose the best out of that. We really, Mark, our manager, gave us a deadline, and it was during, we had the All ATX show.
Right.
And we had our debut show that we did.
Right.
And we had to get the whole record mixed and done. And Roscoe had written a tune called Stand Up Man. Mm-hmm. We were literally recording parts as we were mixing on Saturday and Sunday. And we knew we had to FedEx the tapes out to Bernie Grumman's on Tuesday because he was going to master on Thursday. And literally on Monday night, Russell Tanner, our engineer, and I were going over the masters and making sure. And Roscoe's texting and emailing, well, how about if we add this part or whatever? And finally, I just had to say, Roscoe, I'm sorry.
It's over.
It's over. Well, we're not done yet. I have to go to bed. You know, it was one of the classic. Yeah. It happens to us all. You know?
Yeah. Man, how's he to work with? I bet that's pretty awesome. I like that guy a lot.
He's awesome to work with.
I mean,
with.
He's obviously a total pro.
And a good guy.
Yeah.
And a good dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've known Roscoe for, good God, about 15, 20 years now.
Yeah.
And just, especially after doing the Leonard Cohen thing, he's just really cool. Just mellow, just easy, you know, overall, but very specific.
He's got a laser sharp focus.
Yeah. He can hear like a bat, man. Y'all can.
He's got some good ears, you know.
Huh.
Hello, it's the Austin School of Music.
People answer
this. My wife. She knew I was talking about her.
You're in trouble.
No etiquette. Yeah, Roscoe's great. And in fact, I would say that if anybody would be the George Martin in the group, it would be him that we look to because his depth of experience and musicalness, that's musicality. Sorry.
Is...
very deep, you know?
Yeah. All of you guys have that. I mean, there's a lot of years, and I don't mean that, but I mean, like, there's a lot of experience. There's a lot of playing.
Yeah.
People have played for a long time in this group.
Yeah.
Like,
and I sound like it. I sound like I've been singing for a long time.
Well, I mean, even a guy like Stefano, who's a little younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He still is, I mean...
Oh, his discography is crazy.
And vocabulary is crazy, too. I mean,
a
guy from Italy that can play gospel?
Yeah.
I mean, real gospel, not like, you know, not faux gospel.
Yeah.
Real gospel.
Doesn't he do like a church gig?
Yeah.
He does.
He's
got a church gig. I think Brandon plays drums. I don't remember the church. It's in Northeast Austin.
The one guy I don't know is Les.
Fisher.
Yeah. Les Fisher. Tell me about him.
Well, I met Les... we were playing in a band together in about 2000 called the Bone Shakers.
Okay.
And the drummer in the band hated me. And you know, so, and he couldn't keep
count. I've never heard that before, anybody hating you.
I would ask my friends, I go, I don't know what it is, I can't find the groove. They go, because there is not one. But anyway, he hated me and I understood, you know. So I said, you know, Randy, either this guy goes or you know, I go. To be honest with you, because I got to sing in a pocket. That's the bottom line. He's a good guy. He's a good kid. But I just, you know, I can't sing with him. So let me bring somebody else in. So I call up Les, hence Les Fisher, who learned all the Bone Shaker tunes. and got on a plane, came to L.A., and played the absolute hell out of them. And one of my favorite drummers, because he creates such a pocket, from a groove or a pocket for me to sing in. I'm not rushing. I can rush or drag, or but there's room.
Yeah. You know?
The cat is just really bad. And his father was a jazz drummer for Count Basie, and, you know.
His mom was a jazz singer.
She sang with Duke Ellington, which is how his parents met.
Wow. Yeah.
So he was in DeBarge for years.
His pedigree is pretty cool. You know?
He was like born into the groove.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't have much choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the writing is mostly you two, or also Roscoe and Stefano? Calling him by his last name.
It started out with us, Johnny. Okay. And I would guess, I think 8 of the 10 songs on the album are Malford and I. Actually, 9 of the 10 songs joined by other people in the group. Les co-wrote 3 songs. We have a tune called Katie Don't Kill Me that Malford and Les, Stefano and I wrote.
Katie, I didn't want to name it, I remember.
And Roscoe has helped co-write a couple of the songs.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I think now that it's the band has an identity and whatever, I think we're going to see more contributions from people.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That, I mean, you never know, the possibilities are endless.
You know what, to be honest with you, I think in this situation they really are.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been in things that look like that. On paper, they look good.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But actually, on paper, in real life, this is good. It's really good. And has a lot of great potential, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a different, you guys are releasing this yourselves, right?
Yes.
And so what all are you, like, how do you handle that as a group? Like, Mark handles it?
No, you'd be surprised. Actually, Mark and Dave handle it.
Okay.
Yeah, Mark is actually, I mean, David is really good at this sort of stuff, too. I'm terrible at it. I stay in my lane. I sing, and I try to get out of the way. I don't do photo stuff, or, you know, it's not my thing. I'm not good at it, but I can sing, and I can front. So
that's your karma, man.
That's my karma. That's what I do.
There was a great video on YouTube of you guys doing a song on at Threadgills, and you walked outside of the light. You were just out there singing in the audience. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I love it. Those people were so. I mean, already this band has a lot of goodwill, to be honest with you. And we had tons of people show up for that show, and so I wanted to get out there so I could see them. For one thing, and I could let them know how much I appreciate it, because there's a lot of appreciation. They, you know, like I always say, when people come out to see me, you could be doing something else. I mean, it's a Super Bowl. There's, you know, there's sex with your wife, and I mean, there's tons of stuff you could be doing besides seeing live music. You know, it really is. So to make a plan and do something like that is, you know, it's off the chain for me. So I wanted to, you know, get a little closer. And they're lucky I didn't have a wireless mic. And they're lucky, Russell is lucky that I didn't have a wireless mic. Because I would have ran through the crowd. I would have been feeding back like crazy probably.
Yeah.
But man, I had a great time. It was a great show.
Yeah. And is it exciting for you, Dave, have you been playing out much?
No.
For the last?
Really haven't done much. You know, I had my own thing, which was, you know, guitar hero kind of music. But the school has kept me so busy, Johnny, that I really haven't considered going to play anything other than a charity gig, or every now and then I'll get a show booked. Like if somebody in the Caribbean wants my band to come down, I'll hastily put a band together and go play the show.
Just, like a Dave Seabury band?
Yeah. Okay. So this is a whole new thing for me. In fact, Malford and I were just talking about this, where I'm going to really have to manage my schedule and start waking up early, and like the first 6 hours a day I'm gonna have to work on the school. You know what I mean? Because this is starting to happen. It's gonna be difficult.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about now, is like the rock star life is like waking up early and making sure you email all the right people, and like
getting on social media,
your social media thing.
We
definitely do. Like I do. I mean, I don't mess around. Like those Skyrocket shows are so long. Like if I don't exercise all week, I can't sing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's hard.
Because singing is a whole body thing.
Yeah.
It's not, people, well, you all you got to do is rest your voice. And you've been
No, it's your
whole
body.
It's very holistic. You know, yeah. If I don't rest, that voice sounds like
it. Yeah, try singing a show when you've got Montezuma's Revenge.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy, that happened.
And even that has nothing to do with your voice. It still does.
Yeah.
It's hard to sing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Man.
Oh, God. That must have been horrible.
Yeah, it has been horrible. I mean, imagine like that. But you've been playing this whole time. Like, what all do you have going on right now?
Mainly what I have going on is my band, the Malfoy Milligan Band.
Okay.
And then the other thing is Big Cat. That's it. And I play around with, you know, I do some stuff when Plank is in town.
Yeah.
I'm planking on with the Apostle of Manchac.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to pare down my stuff so I can do Big Cat.
Right.
And have that as my primary band, my only band. Because, you know, there was, you know, at this age, and I know we're not supposed to talk about the O word. I know, duh. Yeah, yeah. But at this age, I kind of want to, you know, a comfortable way to live when I'm in my 70s and stuff like that. And, you know.
Yeah, I read that thing that you wrote on Facebook.
Yeah, man, it was real, because I got some blowback for, you know, starting a band. And
from
some
who? People, like, who gets
mad at you? Well, you know, some people felt betrayed and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
But,
I've been playing with him for this long, and now he's going to go start this band with these dudes. Yeah, and I can't blame they're going to go play eight, you know.
I can't blame him.
All ATX.
I needed a band that was a great band, musically.
But I've also that wanted to do something.
That wanted to do something, yeah. That had the infrastructure to do it. That, you know, I may sound kind of like, you know, professional musician-y, but at this point in my life, I better get there. I need to kind of rev it up there.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there's a day-to-day aspect of it, but also, like, you don't want to just be playing gigs for the $30 of
no,
the thing,
man. I'm so grateful that I get a chance to play in Austin. So grateful for the Saxon Pub for, you know, paying my bills for the last 5 years, to be honest with you. You know, I made most of my money playing there. But it's since the music scene is changing, I got to change too. And I definitely want to do more national, international stuff, you know.
That's good.
Yeah.
You should. You're recognized that way. I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, the guy who looked for Dave, but you're very revered. I mean, you know.
They don't
You're
know
like
me.
The singer of this town. I mean, like,
that's
right?
A great way to put it. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's
Malford is the voice of Austin, kind of.
I'm never going to win Best Male Vocalist.
I don't know, bro. You bad.
No, I mean, you're there. I mean, there was going to throw you. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you're a guy that I believe everyone that sings is like, oh, yeah, Malford. Well, he's, you know, he's the best one.
I was at I remember when Cliff and Antones died.
Yeah.
And I was in the audience at Antones. It was just, and it was full of musicians, guitar players, and bass players. And you don't see very many singers just singing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was the only guy that doesn't, you know, I'm like, wow, I feel better already. That's good. Yeah. Let's go. Let me go play. You got like five guitar players on stage, man.
Yeah.
You know, and so I've been, like I said, I've been lucky to be in this city and to do what I do.
Yeah.
Real lucky.
And you've also been surrounded by some great guitar players the whole time. I mean, great musicians all around, yeah. But definitely great guitar players, yeah. Too.
I've been, isn't that something?
Yeah.
Not most people can say, like, you know, their first national band was with Chris Layden and Thomas Young in Double Trouble.
Yeah.
You know.
And then you were literally surrounded by David's.
I was surrounded by David's. I got another Dave. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you this. Can I ask you this? It's off a little bit, but Storyville started, it was you, and I remember going to see the
Craig
first
few.
Yeah, because.
It was me, Craig Ross.
Go ahead.
It was me, Craig Ross, Scott Garber.
Yes.
And Don.
And Don Harvey.
Don
yeah,
Harvey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Brandon Temple had played for a little bit, but he, you know, he had to lead a band because. You know, he loves jazz. That's what he likes to do. I can't blame him.
Well, I remember when I moved here in 1991, when I moved into the Congress House, I was like, it was the first weekend that I lived here. And I was like, all right, man, I moved here. Like, my two favorite bands were Stick People and Water the Dog.
Oh, yes.
I think Water the Dog broke up the weekend before I moved here. And then,
I did.
Like, I went to go see you guys at where it was Chances.
Yes, we used to play
outside.
At Chances. Yes.
And
I love that.
And
place.
I was so stoked. And when I walked in, I saw Craig and I was like, hey, man, I'm here. Like, oh, cool. So you moved here? I'm like, I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, this is our last show. And I was like, wait a minute.
Dude.
My two, like, bands are going. But then you and Craig started Storyville.
We started Storyville. And from, you know, Stick People open up for the Meters, the Funky Meters. And then I'm on the seventh floor of Tipitina's. Uh-huh. I'm looking down, and I can see the wave of music going through the crowd just going back and forth. I go, I want that. That is like, you know. Music was really accessible. Those guys played for an hour and a half, went in, rested, drank a little bit, and came back out and played for another hour and a half.
Right.
You know, and they were not young men.
No, you know? No.
So I was like, this is incredible. So that's how Storyville got started and got its name. And by the time that I was getting a record deal, Craig had just, you know, he got tired of having me sing his songs. He wanted to go off and do some more stuff. He did. And so I kept the moniker. The record label wanted me to keep a band name. They didn't want to have Malford Milligan.
With Mark at the time?
No, I wasn't. Okay. I got introduced to Mark by Tommy Shannon and Chris Layton.
Okay.
You know, and so I was just, we were free balling for a minute. You know? but then Chris Layton and Tommy Shannon pinned me down at Fran's off of Congress. He goes, I think we ought to start a band together. I'm like, and you know, I'm just as green and starry-eyed as you can get. I'm just like, really? Really? Wow, you guys want to play with me?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just cray-cray.
Yeah. That is crazy.
It is. Damn them.
Yeah. Well, I know people miss that band, and I'm sure they're going to be glad to see that you're up and doing, like a full-on rock band. It's a blues rock band, right? That's not off base to say, is it?
It's not.
There's one of the songs on SoundCloud is a little more rock without the blues in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
There are three tunes on the record that are like that.
Okay.
But it's still, you know, especially listening to later Led Zeppelin, some of their stuff got eclectic, maybe, you know, would be a good word.
Yeah.
But it was still a blues rock band, I guess. And that's our energy, I think, live. But
that's
we do
all I
run,
know how to do.
You know, it's some of the tunes, and this is partially my fault, and I don't know if it's a fault, but the harmonies tend to get, you know, even if it's a blues-based song, we have tritone subs and the harmony that people don't hear every day.
Yeah.
You know, which keeps it interesting to me.
Well, it's cool because there is a level of musicality you could go to and be challenging like Stick People.
Yes.
But that's not always the best way for people to like you.
Yes.
I know is that a weird thing to say? Because you were saying earlier that you have like your guitar hero thing.
Yeah.
There's a specific audience for that, and that's very cool. But like a lot of girls.
Well, it's funny. One of our goals, Johnny, is
now we're talking. Now go.
We want girls to be our primary audience in Big Cat. And not that we don't like guys, but if somehow we look out in the audience or we hear reports about the record that women really like it, then we've hit our goal. So I specifically, like on the guitar playing part of the record, I tried to keep it very accessible and for me did not overplay or anything like that.
But I oversang copiously.
I don't think so.
Every breath I could take, I was singing.
Yeah.
You're not on the Thundercloud sub commercial, are
no,
you?
No, not anymore, man. They're like, I think I shamed them into changing it, you know, because they paid me like a little bit of money and some coupons, you know. But
I hope you got some money because I don't know. I don't know a musician in town that when you ask them like what they had for lunch when they go to say Thundercloud subs, they don't say it like you sang it. I actually don't know anyone who doesn't go Thundercloud subs because it's got to be real. You want something?
My God, you got good memory.
Yeah. I mean, I heard it 12,000 times.
Oh man, it was played a lot. Yeah.
I mean, it was like 15 years of that, right?
Yep, 15 years of that. Of me and Thundercloud subs. They should have gave me a franchise.
They should have.
They should have given you more than they gave you.
I should have got a franchise for that. Oh, well. Me and Jarrett.
No, you're really different.
Yeah, we are. We really have different tastes in women. I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
Good God.
Hey, Dave, before Native Son, what were you doing, if you don't mind my asking?
I was doing a lot of session work.
Okay.
Commercials, and I'd go up to Dallas and play a Kraft cheese commercial and whatever. and it was lucky because early in my musical development, I learned how to read. So I'm one of those rare rock guitar players who can read fairly well.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of jazz guys can, but for commercial work, say, or soundtracks, a lot of those guys couldn't cop a Jimmy Page vibe or sound like Duane Allman or whatever.
Right.
So I was this kind of anomaly. And actually, right before I formed Native Son, I was about to move to Los Angeles to try and get in the studio scene there. But before all that, I also played in some cover bands in town, just making money, you know.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting part of my life.
Yeah.
You know, playing all around the Southwest, and especially 6th Street in the 80s, you know.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Like Toulouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the guy? There was a guy who... I think he was nice. I hate it, you know, because like I was a kid then, like to me, everyone that was older than me that was a musician that talked to me was really nice. And then I'll be like, oh, whatever happened to this guy? And they'll be like, oh, that guy was it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I didn't realize that. There was a scene. Did I know you then? No.
No, I think we met in
then the
89. 89 or 90. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that 6th Street scene was... Were you around then? What
I
were you doing
late 80s.
With Stick People?
90. Yeah, with Stick People.
Okay, so there wasn't a...
Yeah, but you know what, man? We played Steamboat. Stick People used to do Steamboat. And then we would do... I was in a cover band with John Blundell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, called Plan C, I think it was. Or something.
Oh,
like
I remember that,
that
band. Yeah.
And it was John Blundell and John Lockhart. I think Chris Marsh played... who was playing drums? I can't remember. I'm sorry.
You
have to forgive me for that. But I was, you know, for a hot minute, I was in a cover band, you know.
But did you guys, were you guys, like, when it switched the scene from the 80s into the 90s, was it as shocking of a switch as it has been from the 90s into the 2000s? Do you know what I'm saying?
Do you feel like it's a big of a leap?
I can't
answer that because I didn't have a full 80s view of music. I was just getting into it then, you know. But you,
yeah,
you would know.
Well... Are you talking specifically to Austin or
yeah,
just...
Yeah, specifically to Austin. Because you get it so much, like the... And there is, like, I think it was Andy Langer who was like, it's like every generation. It's like, you know, when you got here in the 80s, they were like, oh, you missed it. The 70s were where it was. And then you got here in the 90s. Oh, the 80s were where it was at. People getting here now. Oh, you should have been here in the 90s. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a big switch, mainly because, you know, the big bands... Back in the 80s, especially the early 80s, were mainly blues bands, and the whole singer-songwriter phenomena just wasn't really happening at all, unless it was the Cosmic Cowboys stuff from the 70s.
Right.
So back then, you know, Eric Johnson was starting to be really big, and then, you know, of course, Stevie really hit his stride in the early 80s, and that's when Antones was down on the drag.
Right.
And, you know, there was Angela Straley and
Luann
and all that. And I think the Cobras were still together then, which was one of my favorite bands. And then, of course, that's when everything started changing. Really, back then, the biggest rock group was a band called Too Smooth. Remember them?
No.
In fact, Jeff Clark just played a show at Threadgill's last night.
Okay.
They were the big rock band that everybody would flock to Steamboat to see in the early 80s. So I think with Local Licks Live and KLBJ starting to really focus on local music, Jody Denberg started that whole thing in the late 80s. The rock scene developed a lot more in the 90s. So to me, it was kind of refreshing, actually, to see that.
Right.
Whereas the change now... not that I don't like singer-songwriters, I think it's...
I guess it really is that, isn't it?
It became that. It's changing again, I think. But I just got really tired of everywhere I would go, whether it was in a restaurant or whatever, is, you know, there'd be somebody singing their poetry kind of stuff, you know?
Dude, I'm with you. I mean, I think in some worlds am classified as that, but I don't have any songs where I'm leaving San Antonio.
I don't think of you that
going,
way at all.
But you know what I mean? Like, I'm still like a... I had that problem when I moved here in the early 90s.
Really?
Like, I hated it.
Yeah.
I sounds bad. I just thought everything, I was like, there, you have a choice to be two things in this town, blues or singer-songwriter. No one colored really outside those lines that much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were guys like Joe Rockhead and guys like Soul Hat doing it, I guess. But like, when, like, it's funny because, like, I don't know if you guys remember Mr. Rocket Baby. It was so colorful and we dressed weird.
Yeah,
it was,
I love
so,
that band.
It was so specifically like against that. Like, I think that if we lived in San Francisco, it wouldn't have been as colorful looking or as ooh la 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 kind of thing. Because it was almost like, I'm going to do something that nobody else here is even thinking of doing. And like, it's almost embarrassing to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like stepping outside of that. I mean, it was weird.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. It that singer-songwriter thing, it really kind of changed things.
And, well, you know, now there's a lot of great musicians, whether it's Sean Colvin or Patty Griffin or, you know, Susanna. The list goes on, and they've created some great music.
That's so awesome you just named her in that group of people.
Yeah, yeah. I love her. She's great.
Me too.
I actually gave her her start. She had gone to school in Santa Fe. I forget the name of the college. And I gave her a job as a receptionist. And I really encouraged her to start going out and working on her own thing. And not that I gave her a start.
No. But yeah.
Know, gave her a platform for it.
Yeah.
You gave her a job so she could eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Definitely.
That's a good start.
Definitely. So you guys did the All ATX. Do you get to jam with Todd Rundgren there?
At the very end, we sang one of his songs, like a We Are the World moment.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember the song. Do you?
I saw
the light?
Yes, it was that. It was a weird tune to get up with 20 people and do, you know?
Yeah.
But he was very nice and charming.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he even knew who I was. I couldn't believe it.
Really?
Yeah,
he said he used to play Storyville stuff.
Wow.
I'm like, dude, you know.
That is awesome.
I'm like, really?
You know. I've heard mixed things about him, like that he was real mean, and then that he was real nice.
Well, like, maybe he's moody.
I caught him on a good day then.
Yeah, and then there's those weird things where like someone meets you, and you like, you know, you never know. Guy might have to poop or something, and you know, you run into someone at the airport, and they're like, "Hey, yeah, dude, whatever." And you're like, "Man, I met that guy who's such a jerk. I met Clem Burke the other night at that Flanagan thing."
Uh-huh.
And he was totally on his phone, and I went up, and I was like, "I love you." And he was like, yeah, and I got back on his phone, and as I was walking away, I was like, God, what a jerk. And then I was like, what if he's having a fight, like, with his girlfriend, and, like, some idiot walks up and be like, I like Blondie, you know? Like, that's what I thought. You guys did the All ATX show. You did the debut show. By the time this comes out, you will have done a show at...
Continental Club.
Yep. It's your own show.
Yep.
And then you're having a release on Thursday, October 27th.
29th.
29th.
October 29th, yeah.
I was wrong. I'm sorry.
It's
29th.
Mark!
Your manager. Okay, so October 29th, you're doing a Waterloo in-store, a Continental Club record release, mm-hmm. and then are you gonna take this thing somewhere?
Well, we sure hope to.
No, I mean, like, are you gonna go out and do the record like
other cities?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, that's the plan. In fact, Mark is working on. Can I say this about China?
Sure.
Mark married a lovely girl named Linda, who's from China, and has been there more than several times, I guess. So he's working with the Chinese consulate for Big Cat to go perform in China and make it like a cultural exchange thing.
Awesome.
The thing about the band, especially with Roscoe and I, we're both educators, and so we're talking about giving clinics on American music and, you know, having people come and sharing their ideas or whatever. So that's very exciting.
Yeah. I didn't know Roscoe was also an educator.
Oh, yes. Big time. Yeah. So we're doing that, and we're planning on Europe and Eastern Europe. I'm sure Japan. I don't know, Mark's kind of spearheading all that. But the plan is right now is to really solidify our base in Austin and get the ship right, so to speak, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm sure you guys would do really well in Europe. Didn't Storyville go to Europe a bunch?
A few times.
Yeah?
I think, yeah. And I still, you know, people know me over there. That's, I got two or three people that know me. So.
Well, Malford's going to Europe. When are you going? November 1st?
First 2 weeks.
November. Doing the Malford Milligan band there?
Well, no, actually I'm playing with a friend of mine from the Netherlands, Jack Hustings.
Oh, cool.
And we wrote a couple of tunes together. One of them being about the old word, life will humble you. And so I'm going to go, you know, do a couple of weeks over there. And my girlfriend is going to go see stuff and have a good time. And I'm going to go rest and sing like a, you know, like a motherfucker.
Yeah. That's like you always sing. Yeah, yeah. You don't leave much up there.
Yeah. I try not
people.
To.
People. Yeah.
Although, no, you know, I keep a little bit for myself, but I like to let it go.
I'll tell you what, especially having not played in a while, keeping up with Malford is no easy task as a guitar player, you know. So being in a band with Malford and Roscoe, both those guys have played with the greatest players alive today, you know.
Yeah.
Including Eric. Yeah. Robin Ford, you know, list goes on.
That's where I met Dave Grissom. That's where I met Roscoe. I don't know if he would remember me, but I did some shows opening for Robin. I don't know why. I think it was just because somebody got me the gig. Because, like, when we showed up, the guy was like, yeah, I don't think his audience was that that enthralled either. But he was really nice. And I ended up running into him, like, in L.A. randomly at a rehearsal place. And we just hung out. He's like, I mean, he's also amazing, Robin Ford, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
He's like, my favorite guitar player.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And a good cook, apparently.
Yeah?
Not really. Yeah. I ran into him in Italy.
Oh,
he
you
was
did?
Taking cooking classes. Yeah.
Oh, people just run into him everywhere.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So, but we did, I think, a couple of shows with them. And then I just ended up talking to Roscoe, and it turned out we lived like a block away from each other. And then we ended up hanging out a couple of times.
Wow. In L.A., you mean?
No, here.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was here where I met him. I ran into Robin. Sorry, that story was convoluted. I ran into Robin Ford aside from...
From Roscoe.
In L.A.
Got it.
Years after that. And he was nice.
Cool.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Where do you guys rehearse? At the music school?
Mm-hmm.
School
music? Where Skyrocket used to rehearse.
Skyrocket used to rehearse.
We remodeled that room, though. You ought to come back and rehearse there. It's nice. Like, made it all acoustically nice.
Oh, yeah.
Put wood up all over.
And I saw that you guys maybe it wasn't Big Cat. Maybe it was just you two did something there in the performance room, in the recital room. Did you guys perform there recently?
Van Wilkes did a show there.
Okay.
And he asked us to sit in, so.
Oh, good.
That was loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. The sound man, Eli, measured it at the peak was like 117 decibels.
I love Van Wilkes, man.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he really is. He's in that video where
he comes up. Yeah. He comes up. He's Van Wilkes.
Yeah, he is.
Good
Van
God.
Wilkes.
He's everywhere.
He man. Is Van Wilkes.
He's Van Wilkes.
All right, so people can find you guys by looking up Big... Wait. Shit, I got the wrong thing. Sorry. Wrong page open. At Big Cat on Facebook?
Yeah, Big Cat Austin on Facebook.
Okay, Big Cat Austin on Facebook.
And our website, which is under construction, but it will be bigcataustin.com.
Okay, bigcataustin.com, and then there's a link to SoundCloud where you have music, and then there's Reverb Nation,
mm-hmm.
where you guys were ranked like number 7.
Really?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
That's cool.
Yeah. I've never even been ranked on that thing. I was like,
no.
What in the?
That's cool.
What's going on? Yeah.
Wow.
And there's a lot of bands on Reverb Nation, like millions.
Wow, dude.
Yeah.
We'll have to check that out. I've never even been to Reverb Nation, so.
It's a country.
Yeah, it's a country.
There's a lot of
Reverb. It's weird. You have no online presence.
Me
there's
personally?
There's no trace of you.
No.
And what is that like? Is that like liberating? Do you live like a better life than the rest of us? Like at this point, like in 2015, after I've been on Twitter since 2007 and Facebook since 2006, like, Are you happier than me? I'm on Facebook,
and I'll share you my deal. The reason, besides not, I'm kind of a private guy.
I respect that about you.
Thank you. My wife and I both have stalkers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hers are worse than mine, but I have a crazy woman, and so it's like it's a big intrusion into life having that.
Wow.
You know? So we just keep quiet.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's weird. I had some stalkers.
I bet you did.
Online. Yeah. They're creepy, but they kind of faded away.
It's scary, kind of, isn't it?
It's weird.
What's up?
You know what? It must just be like the poetic side of me. Whenever I like read stuff, when someone writes you something that's real long and you don't know them and they don't know you, but they're like telling you stuff like you just don't really tell people you've never met and stuff like that. Yeah. You're just like, you know what gets me is like, fuck, man, people are lonely. Like, people are all alone out there in the world where they have to tell this dude that stuff that, like, I would never tell me. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's weird.
It's weird with all the social media interactions and phones or whatever. We're a generation of really lonely, poorly socialized people, especially younger people than us. You know, I see it all the time because I'm around kids all the time.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys have seen this. We franchised our rock camp idea, and I was up in New York, I think about 2005 was when I first saw this, and all the kids were taking a break and went over to this bagel shop, right? And there was a table full of like six kids, three girls and three boys. And the girls, I mean, they were teenagers, so don't get this wrong, but they were very attractive young ladies.
Right.
And every one of them were looking at their iPhone texting. And I'm like going up to this guy, this guitar player. I'm going, hey, what's up, man? You know, you should be talking to this girl here. Yeah. And he goes, well, I am. I went, what? He goes, well, yeah, we're talking. I go, that was the first time I saw that. And now you see it all the time is kids get together and they don't look at one another and, you know, see each other. They just look, they're glued to their phones. And that makes me sad. You know, that's.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. I've noticed it. I mean, over the last decade, like just playing shows, like. Mm-hmm. You just see pictures from the shows too, and they're just like half the people are just like, they're just not engaged.
Yeah.
Or they're holding up like, I don't understand the film, like standing up at the front of the stage and filming.
No, you lose the whole experience.
It sounds terrible.
Yeah.
When you put it up, it's like, like, oh, why are you doing this? Yeah. It's weird. It's a different world.
Yeah. It's like everybody thinks they're engaged, but they're disengaged because they're really not communicating where it counts.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah. So what kind of final words do you have for the people? Do you have any final thoughts?
You know what? I have one final thought.
Okay.
Lunch. 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 I'm an easy soul. Lunch.
Yeah. Mark Procht from an earlier episode.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah.
Good to see you again, Johnny.
Good to see you.
Hey, I just want to say something because about this band, which I'm excited about. Johnny was nice enough to have me on the program a while back. And what I really want to say is Big Cat's going to be an experience. And what needs to be done is music has to be put back into the music. And I've been around the business for 40 years. I've worked with almost every artist in Austin. Malford and I worked together in Storyville, and I had the pleasure to work with some amazing musicians. And Malford called me a few months ago and asked me to come listen to what he was doing. And I did, and I was just knocked out that it was real music by real musicians. And we're just going to do the best we can to bring this music to the audience, starting in Austin and spreading out. But coming to a Big Cat show is going to be an experience, and I'm cracking the whip. I mean, Malford is one of the best frontmen and one of the best singers I've ever had the pleasure to work
with.
And it is an experience to come see him perform. And it is with accompanied by these musicians who are, in their own right, great, everyone in this band.
Yeah.
So it's bringing back that experience that when people come to the show, they leave with something. And again, they feel like they were part of the show, want everybody to say, hey, whatever the cover is, $1, $10, whatever it is, they say, we got our money's worth.
Oh, yeah.
And they leave sweating. And they will with this band. And it's also to try to reach out. And the hardest problem in this town sometimes, and probably other cities, is reaching a wider audience. Yes, I'm 60 years old. I love the music. My friends love the music. My 50-year-old friends love the music.
Right.
45-year-old, 40-year-old. We want to reach down to 30 and reintroduce the 20-year-olds to real music again.
Yeah.
Get them excited about it.
Yeah.
So everybody needs to come out and at least experience one show, and if they like it, come back again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll put my clothes back on. I'll put every drop of them back
on.
And
I'll stop preaching.
Yeah, no,
no, man.
This guy's great. You should get him to be your manager.
Yeah. You think?
Maybe.
I'm passionate about it. And yeah. I've been passionate about every band I've worked with and have been a good judge of good talent. Not all of them have succeeded.
No.
Some of them have shot themselves in the foot pretty well and self-destructed. Yeah. But they've all been great musicians. And Big Cat's right up there.
Well, good. Good. Well, I believe that. I think I love all of you guys in the band, even though I don't know Les.
You'd love him.
I would love him
yeah.
if I met him. And Mark's a great guy. That book is, I still think everyone needs to go get that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Somebody
Home
me,
today.
I was at a show last night. Somebody came up to you and they said something to me. He said, "You were mean, but you were mean when you needed to be."
Yeah.
I think that's a good compliment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I try to protect my band.
Yeah, it's funny when you don't know you, there's since you're quiet, no one, I think, wants to mess around with you. But then once you get to know you, you're just this nice guy. I won't tell anyone that, though.
Thank you. I'm trying to help people.
Mark Prock's tough. He cracks the whip. Well, tell the other guys in the band I said hi. People should get out on October. Oh, that's why.
It's October 2nd and
no,
the 29th.
It is the 29th, yeah.
Yeah.
Thursday, October 29th, Waterloo and Continental Club.
You got it.
Anything else you want to say, Malford? Come on.
Hey, man, you should. I'll start cussing and talk. That's the only. That's the drawback about having me as a front person, because you can't have too much time between songs.
I think as a front person, you're one of the funniest. You really are. You're one of the funniest.
I'm the goofiest.
At some of those Apostles things, like, you make me laugh so hard, and it's like the just the last thing you say under your breath before Brandon counts in a song.
Oh, my
like,
God.
Like, just this little, you just say this, and it's hilarious, yeah.
Yeah, I shouldn't do
more that. Comedy from Malford.
No more comedy
and,
from Malford.
Anyone out there that's interested in learning how to play an instrument, or you have a kid that you want to teach them the right way to learn, check out Austin School of Music.
Thank you.
Dave Seabury's done an amazing job. He's brought up some great people and employed a lot of my friends. So thank you for that.
You bet.
Yeah. Thank all of you guys.
Thanks, John.
All right, everyone get out and check out Big Cat.
If I could turn back the hands of time, turn back, baby.
Yeah, Big Cat, Malford Milligan and Dave Seabury from the band Big Cat sitting down and talking to me. I've known those guys for years. Their new band, Big Cat, you can find out all about them at BigCatAustin.com. You can find them on Facebook, find them on the Reverb Nation and on the SoundCloud. Don't forget their record, their full-length album, will be available, I believe, probably Friday the 30th to people on the internet, but Thursday, October 29th, they will be doing a Waterloo in-store and also a record release show at the Continental Club. So everybody in Austin, get out there and support that. These guys are legends in this town, man. You know, Malford, to me, really is the voice of Austin. Dave Seabury, the musical director at all those all ATX things, and been a huge part of the music scene for a long time. Roscoe Beck, Jesus Christ. I go look him up on, like, allmusic.com. And then call me back and tell me what you think of that. Les Fisher, amazing drummer. Stefano Intellisano plays with everyone. Great guy. Served on a panel with him for the Austin Music Foundation. Love these guys, man. Mark Prock at the helm, driving the boat. What a great guy. All these guys, great music, great band. Big Cat, get out there, find them. BigCatAustin.com while you're out there on the internet looking up Big Cat on the Facebook and stuff. Don't forget that you can like our Facebook page. You can go onto the iTunes and subscribe to this podcast. And while you're there, gang, listen, leave a comment, leave a rating. That helps us with our overall rating on iTunes, which helps us secure advertising to keep this show free for you. So ultimately, you guys rating it and leaving a comment ultimately affects you. So if you are a narcissist like myself and just only want to do things for yourself, do that, okay? Let's hear some more music from Big Cat. I want to thank Dave and Malford for stopping by. I want to thank Mark for hooking it all up. I will be there at the record release Thursday, October 29th. Continental Club. I'm going to try and make it to the Waterloo, too. I love going to the Waterloo in stores. Love John Koontz. Got to get him on the show. Let's do that. John Koontz from Waterloo.
come on my show. Let's hear some music from Big Cat. Thank you guys for listening. Everyone have a great day. Let's get down.
All your sins are your own.